Welcome to Season 2 of TNT's Hit Songs from Mars, where we unravel the stories behind some of pop's most unlikely hits.
From simple curiosities to songs that changed the world, we examine the socio-political and cultural factors that contributed to the success of these surprising outliers.
And the impact these songs had on society. I'm Tom Thompson.
And I'm Tyler Ralston. And together we're...
TNT.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
How are you on this fine fall day?
Well, it's a beautiful, it's been a beautiful couple of days, and then I think there's like a deluge of rain coming any moment. And it has that very still feeling, like right before a lot of rain is coming. So.
Yeah, that sort of thing that people's joints pick up on, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I got my swim in this morning.
It was good. A nice crisp swim.
Yeah. I made a pretty exciting purchase the other day.
Steel guitar?
No. I bought 6 golf clubs for guess how much?
$5 a piece.
$5 for all 6.
Hey, you got taken for a ride, man.
What? Damn you.
80 cents a club. Come on.
They're even lefties for the gauche like myself.
That's good. I'm sure that's a rare find if you're actually looking for used golf clubs for under $1.
It actually is. And you know, the weird thing is I was driving by and I could actually tell from just looking at them driving by. I'm like, oh, those are lefties. I'm actually going to go in and stop there. It was kind of funny because the nice women that were running this garage sale, because there was a really disgusting golf cart, not cart, but what do you call things that you put golf clubs in? You can tell I'm a huge golfer. Golf bag? Is it really that boring? I think you're right.
It's not my world, man.
You're not playing a lot of golf out in Kentucky?
Not a whole lot, no.
Okay. Are there golf courses out there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. There are definitely golf courses around. There's one fairly close, which... I guess the coolest thing about it that I can tell is that apparently elk roam onto it from time to time.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, or you can at least find traces of them. You know, there's elk around. It's interesting. They are big mothers. We talked about this once before, if I'm not mistaken.
They're huge. There's a lot of bear around here right now. We're on high alert. They've been roaming around our roads, taking over and leaving their big berry-filled poops all over the road.
Yeah, well, if you guys be more responsible and stop leaving trash out all the time, be a little more environmentally sensitive, things would be much better.
Well, that's
better
true.
For them, better for you.
Anyway, back to my golf story.
Okay.
We diverged. So there was this golf bag, I guess we can call it, and it was disgusting. But there was 6 left clubs and then about, I think, like a whole set of right clubs. And the ladies were very mad at me that I didn't take the whole, as soon as I, the price said $10. And as soon as I approached them, they said, $5 $5 for our American listeners. And so I paid $5, but I just took out the clubs that I wanted. And they were very angry at me that I didn't take the big, gross, dusty, golf bag with me.
Apparently they should have charged or paid you to take it away.
Yeah, well, I figured I was doing them a service. You know, now they can sell a whole set of clubs for another $5 to someone else, a righty, the righties of the world.
Well, on that happy note, what do you got for us today?
All right, Ty, this is a real Canadian classic.
Okay.
So I expect you to be on your best behavior and respect it fully and completely.
And I promised to respect it fully and completely for what it is.
Good. Okay. Well, I think we can. I think we can get started here. Are you excited? How excited are you?
On the excite-o-meter, off the charts.
Okay, that's what I was hoping for. Here we go. It was from when the
cars had smashed us all. Okay. Which, of course, was also on my list.
Oh, interesting.
No, I do have a lot to say about this one.
Okay. Good. Okay, I think you seem to be very familiar with this song, so I'm going to stop it here.
It's, I mean, familiarity. I mean, that's from anyone who was aware of music in 1990, what would it have been, four-ish?
Mm-hmm. Came out in 93, but yeah, 94.
It wouldn't have been a hit in the States actually for, well, maybe it was, but I'm remembering a specific time and place that puts it at 94.
Okay. Well, that's so interesting because the weird thing is that you may not be as familiar with, I was actually originally going to, the song I was going to present to you was the Superman song. You know that
also
one
on
well.
My list.
What? You're going to do the same
thing? I was going to do a twofer. It was going to be this one in Superman for the very reasons that I suspect we're both on the same wavelength on, but let's find out.
Yeah, so you guys picked the wrong dumb song as a big hit. Oh, maybe that's not where you were going with this.
Did you say dumb? I thought you were going to be respectful.
You picked the dumb one. No. Oh, no, you just have to be respectful.
No, I do. You can dump on them all you want. Okay. No, I think we're going to be more or less on the same page here. Superman's song is the far superior one in every conceivable way. Mm-hmm. It didn't become a hit in the States, although you can correct me on that if it entered the charts or something.
It didn't do nearly as well. So yeah, it was basically the Superman song was really big in Canada and, but it barely broke anywhere else.
I've never heard it anywhere other than in Canada. And I remember specifically the summer that it came out, 91.
Yeah, that's right.
It was just, I was amazed by it. I heard it and like, this is great.
Superman never made any money for saving the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him.
I couldn't wait to get my hands on the CD, and I did.
Yeah, I loved that CD. I have to say, I really enjoyed it. And it seems weird to me now listening back to it, but I did really enjoy it at the time.
Well, I mean, here's the deal with that. The album, The Ghosts That Haunt Me is what it was called.
That's right.
The deal was they had the Superman song, and then you had a similar kind of feel, which was Won't You Come
to My Funeral When My Days Are Done.
When you do that, they had a lot of similar feel to it. The rest of it was sort of like Pogues-esque Irish
folk rock. Yeah.
Yeah. With the tin whistle and the whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being utterly disappointed when all of the songs didn't sound like the Superman song. Only one other one did. Although a lot of those songs really did grow on me. The one about wisdom teeth. She'll Be coming back soon.
It's true. I know it's true that I was made for
But okay, here's my take on the transition from The Ghosts That Haunt Me to And God Shuffled His Feet, if I'm not mistaken, was the one.
Yeah, that's right.
On.
Yep.
Yeah, my take on it is you had the guy's bass or baritone voice, and very nicely done on The Ghosts That Haunt Me, but they killed the goose that laid the golden eggs when they did every song like that on And God Shuffled His Feet.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of it for them. But
the world disagreed because that was the thing that really, I mean, that's when they really took off. So just to give our listeners a little bit of an indication of what a huge hit this was, it was number four in the US. And as we said, it was kind of a disappointment in Canada. It only went to number 14, which is still pretty high, but not nearly as Superman song, I think, got to number four in Canada. But it was a number one in Australia, Belgium, Denmark, Germany, Iceland, Lithuania, Norway, and Sweden. That's a massive worldwide
hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one's, I'm not arguing with its success. I'm just saying, they had
artistically
expended
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
artistically.
That was it. That it, somehow they'd done everything they couldn't have done everything they could have done. They just overexposed themselves and they got the big hit, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they've done stuff since, but
they have. They did quite a bit. Okay. They had quite a few albums after that, and one of them was I don't remember exactly the name of it, but it had like a little bit more of a harder guitar, like electric guitar kind of sound to it. And of course, they covered that XTC song "Peter Pumpkinhead" for a movie.
I've never heard the cover. I remember the XTC version.
Yeah, well, apparently he was heavily influenced by XTC, which I can kind of see the quirky chord changes and things like that. I can kind of see, and the topics are interesting. And of course, someone to enter our podcast again, Weird Al Yankovic, of course, did a parody of this song. Do you know that? Are you familiar with that?
I did not know that.
Okay. Well, I have it for you here. We'll play it.
All right.
Once there was this girl who swore that one day she would be a figure skating champion. And when she finally made it, she saw some other girl who was better. And so she hired some guy to club her in the knee.
Tonya Harding.
That's right. It's almost too close to the original.
Yeah.
So you never heard that?
Nope.
Oh wow. Because it was actually a big hit too for Weird Al.
The Weird Al,
the parody was.
It didn't actually chart, did it?
Yeah, it did.
That's funny. No, I had really no clue. Funny. I had no clue that he'd done it or that it would have even charted. You're right. It's too close, though. There's something, it needs to be something else to make it truly a parody. I guess, I mean, it's a parody. It's just dead on.
You know what's funny is that at one point, the Crash Test Dummies actually played and sang with Weird Al. Together, they sang the song together.
Yeah, and that. At least they have a good sense of humor about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I did a little research into the lyrics of the song, and it's kind of interesting the way it's presented. There's three stories of children who are kind of outsiders, basically. And at the time that they released it, he sort of completely separated himself from the characters in the song. But in later years, as people often do, he admitted that a lot of them had personal implications to him, things that he'd gone through in his life. And so I thought that was pretty. It's interesting. I mean, first of all, probably the weirdest song title ever. That could be a whole podcast, I suppose, too. But what a weird thing. And apparently, I love this, too, is that the stories he told a long time ago, and now he's actually fessing up to things. At the time, people were saying, well, what kind of dunce are you? You couldn't think of any lyrics for this bit. And he was like, no, that's, you know, you're supposed to contemplate. It's, you know, between the stories of these children, you're supposed to think about what's happened in the previous verse. But then he did recently admit that he couldn't think of lyrics for it, and he had a demo and he gave it to the band and said, don't worry, I'll fill in the chorus lyrics later. Everything else was written, basically. And they all came back to him and said, no, don't touch a thing, it's great having that. So which is kind of crazy, but you know, that might be a huge part of the appeal.
It's an interesting song. It's a good song. The whole album's good. I listened to that for the summer it came out, or summer I got my hands on it. I listened to it repeatedly, mm-hmm. probably with this particular song being the one that got skipped after a while. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember it being really good, heavier, more heavy mm-hmm. rock oriented. Mm-hmm. They dropped any pretense of Irish whistle music, if mm-hmm. I remember correctly. I don't remember.
I think so. Yeah,
there.
I think you're right. Yep.
And probably it was something of an attempt to reach a wider appeal than, you know, Canadian folk rock, and they succeeded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think. One of the interesting things about it is that while it did so well, this album, I think was nominated for 3 Grammys. I don't know if it won any of them, but, this was a huge success, an international success. And the interesting thing is that it's become a song that it's hated by so many people. And so it's, in fact, it's been on, the VH1 had a list of like the 50 most awesomely bad songs ever. It was number 15, and it was also number 15 on the Rolling Stones most annoying hits. So there's something. Now, this is a question I have for you. Obviously there's music that's considered classic, it defies boundaries of time and space.
Oh, that sounds very
cosmic.
But
it's considered timeless, and
sure.
And this is clearly not one of them. So
you're saying it's very early 90s. And it's
well, this is a thing that's very interesting to me is that how some songs you can so accurately date them to a specific period. Even just by the way they sound. Like, for example, there was a time when the 80s, I would say, like there was like a certain snare sound that everyone used, and it's now considered horrible. It's just like this really thin, reverby snare sound.
Right, they put a little echo on the snare. Cool at the time.
Yeah, it was cool at the time. And it's just interesting how some songs are completely timeless, but then some are so stuck in an era and they just don't survive it.
Fair enough. Now, this one, I guess you could say, really hasn't stood the test of time. You don't hear it that often.
No.
But yet, it's not a bad song. Again, I'll reiterate that. But to be fair, if it were one of those songs that I've got a running list of songs I never want to hear again, number one, Stairway to Heaven, you get the idea, you know?
Yeah. I still love the guitar solo in Stairway to Heaven. It's awesome.
The song's incredible, but I never want to hear it again.
Yeah, fair.
That's the problem. It's just cloying. You've heard it too many times. And then when you've had enough of it, you heard it another too many times. And then finally enough is enough. Whereas at one point you couldn't turn it up high enough. It's like, couldn't get to the stop button fast enough.
Yeah.
But if this one were played a lot, like some of those other, some of those other big hits, I suspect it would be like, oh God, no, I can't listen to this another time. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I was referring to when I said they'd sort of killed the goose that laid the golden eggs. Mm-hmm. The elements of that song that were appealing initially quickly became unappealing. Like the first thing people are going to do is make fun of the overly deep voice when mm-hmm. it borders on being forced. Whereas if you listen to some of the guy's other songs, especially from that earlier album, The Guns That Haunt Me, if you listen to that, he doesn't sing like that, except at nice, tasteful times when it's appropriate. But mm-hmm. on that second album, they may have had one before that, I don't know. But on the God Shuffles Its Feet, it's every song is, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And it's just it's going to get annoying.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because what I learned is that it started to become really big in Atlanta, Georgia, for some reason. I guess some radio station was probably playing it a lot. And the singer Brad Roberts credits the record company Arista for seizing on that opportunity to really push it out there. So okay. It did have a very large marketing machine behind it. And, you know, that's a big thing. If it hadn't, who knows?
You could say that about so many things.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, their record company was behind them and they made it a big hit.
Yeah. But I guess I'm trying to get to the bottom of this idea of what makes some, and, you know, part of it could just be, as you say, like being overplayed makes things annoying. For example, I would say, you know, when everyone was going gaga over Coldplay, I remember specifically my friend Brenda Bedford. We was actually at a wedding and everyone was going crazy about Coldplay. Coldplay is amazing. And they're like, they're the next U2 and all this stuff. And she's like, no, they're not. They're going to be gone. You're going to be so annoyed by them in 2 years. And I was like, no way. They're me. Everyone was like, no, they're great. And sure enough, they became so annoying to the point where I think that especially the first album is really good, but oh God, I can't listen to them at all.
It got annoying because the music got annoying. I mean, the lyrics became maudlin and drippy as opposed to interesting. I mean, there was a qualitative decline.
Yeah, that song Yellow, that was pretty cool. That first song that really kind of broke them. Look at the stars, look how they shine for you. And everything you do. Yeah, they were all yellow. I came along, I wrote a song.
That's one that would definitely get skip.
Yeah. I mean,
the rest of the album's better.
Yeah.
And it was called Yellow.
Yeah. I mean, it seems ridiculous now, but at the time I liked it.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I thought
you
were supposed to be respectful, Ty.
He's not Canadian. Chris Martin is not true. Canadian.
Thank God.
So now you're being disrespectful. What's funny, Maudie, my wife, was watching, she has the Brazilian television network here, and so she watches it a lot. Rock in Rio was on not so long ago live, and she was watching that, and Coldplay was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was an interesting shot. It was pouring down rain, but Chris Martin's there still pounding away at the scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got thousands of people basically doing a crash test dummies to the song The Scientist because no one knew the words, but they're humming along as best they could, as loud as they could. Huh. So you hear it was actually pretty cool. I had to give them credit. It was kind of a neat moment.
I just want to interject a story in there. Apparently,
interject away.
Brad Roberts was saying that as soon as a record becomes that successful, the touring is relentless, right? And they just, you know, the record companies are like, no, you know, these bands are out there for like 3 years in a row in some cases with maybe like 2 weeks off or something. But apparently they were touring in Europe and they were supposed to have a day off. And instead they added a stop in Finland. And he said that, well, he would have loved to go visit Finland, but he was so exhausted that he didn't want to play. But when he got there, it was just the wildest show. There's like 40,000 people or something. And imagine how weird it would be hearing that back to you from everyone in the audience. Strange.
Yeah. It's not exactly something like weirder than belt words. Out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's you have to kind of keep your mouth shut for it to work. It's bizarre. Yeah.
It's kind of bizarre. Yeah.
Try to scream those lyrics at the top of your lungs. I dare you. Let's hear it, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But the band sort of had its, you know, it had its expiration dates sort of already implanted within the stuff. Again, by overdoing it with the voice, the name for the band was horrid. Could they have come up with a worse name for a band? Especially considering the music does not, especially for the Ghosts That Haunt Me, does not match Crash Test Dummies.
Well, to defend the name slightly, I do think it wasn't a name that was that familiar at that. Like people, you know what I mean? It wasn't so common the way the word is now. They were just kind of coming up with the concept of Crash Test Dummies. So it was a bit more original at that time is what I'm saying.
I mean, when I first heard the name of the band, it's like, oh, those things they do commercials for wearing your seatbelt. I mean, that's the first thing that came to my mind. It just strikes me as a poor choice.
Weird fit for them, for sure.
It's just, a poor choice. Just a dumb name to begin with. Yeah. Am I treading the waters? Am I going over the line for being respectful here?
I just think there's a lot worse names out there.
I never said it was worst name. I would
actually put it in the median of bad names.
The median. Okay, let me hear. What's the worst name for a band?
Rainbow Butt Monkeys.
That's up there. They were talking. That's a fun, lively. Now, if it's gospel music, it's the worst name for a band. But come on, the Rainbow Butt Monkeys, you got to be kidding me. Huh. Did you just make that up, or is there really a band called that?
There's a band called that, dude.
Okay.
They were pretty big.
It just reminded me of New Potato Caboose, which was a Grateful Dead sort of knockoff band that was sort of endorsed by the Dead as acceptable, or at least by Deadheads as, well, you can listen to this, it's cool enough.
Right.
Here's one, speaking of Canadians that piss off Americans, which happens sometimes, when we're aware enough of Canadians to begin with.
Yeah. Us annoying little gnats up north.
It's like,
little flies.
Neil Young's been known to piss off an American or two. Southern Man, a song I absolutely despise for a lot of different reasons. But, he sang Southern Man. It was, basically an indictment against racism. And fair enough. I think it was just rather a clumsy attempt at it. But, an indictment against racism.
Southern man, better keep your head. Don't forget what your good book said. Southern change gonna come at last. Now your crosses are burning fast. Southern man.
Whereas a lot of Southerners took that very personally. It's like, not everyone's like that. Lynyrd Skynyrd responds in Sweet Home Alabama. We heard Mr. Young sing about us. You know the lyrics. Sing it, Tom. Heard old Neil put her down. Hope Neil Young will remember. A Southern man don't need him around anyhow. Anyway, so they responded.
And then Kid Rock covered that, and then it swung in the opposite direction again.
Oh, God. Yeah. All right. But there's more to the story, Neil Young pissing off Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Okay.
By the end, Skynyrd, most of them died in that horrible plane crash and all of that several years later. Lynyrd Skynyrd and Neil Young, I guess, ran into each other at various points in their careers, battled it out, ended up patching things up and playing on stage together at one point.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know if they sang Southern Man or Sweet Home Alabama that night, but either way, they managed to patch things up and play music. And I think as the story goes, the song Powderfinger, one of Neil Young's bigger hits from that era, was written specifically for Lynyrd Skynyrd to record. But the accident, the plane crash happened, and that was that. So he recorded it. And I just turned 22. I was wondering what to do. The closer they got, the more those feelings grew. So you get the these strange little ins and outs as, you know, time goes on with music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember being kind of surprised and upset when Axl Rose, who had kind of had like homophobic lyrics in his songs, was performing with Freddie Mercury or after Freddie Mercury's death. I think he was doing one of those tribute shows for Freddie Mercury. And I was like, that doesn't seem right to me. But maybe he changed his ways.
Yeah, well, the Guns and there, I mean, there's one song. It's called what is it? One in a Million, where it's flagrant racist lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
There was some sort of, at least it almost seems like a staged deal where the band Living Color confronted Axl Rose, but it couldn't have happened. Security would have, you know, it was staged. If it actually did happen, it's not apocryphal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Axl Rose did it by, no, I'm not like that. I'm just singing from the perspective of this person, which is always a, yeah, it is, exactly.
Yeah. Did you have a big Guns N' Roses phase?
No, never did. I actively disliked them when they got so big, I think it was more in the vein of, these guys are big, I'm counterculture, so therefore I don't like what's big. But it's one of those, and honestly, I didn't care for them all that much at any phase. But, you know, a few of the songs, you know, to this day, I'll crank up in the car or whatever.
Yeah. What do you think about Slash as a guitarist?
That, you know, that's an interesting question. He's been derided as being terrible. I've heard people say he's phenomenal to play with. I wouldn't have a, I mean, just based on my own listening to his playing and stuff, competent, but not the greatest of all time.
Pretty melodic, more than a lot of that stuff probably at that time, where it was just shredding, you know, like his
lines
were pretty melodic, and I would say more musical than a lot of the shredding that was going on at that time.
Interesting. What do you think of him as a guitarist?
I think he's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
And I do think in that group of bands at that time, I do think he was a bit more musical than most.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Did you go through a GNR phase, Tom?
No, not really.
Yeah.
No, I guess because they were a little bit after when I was listening to that stuff, I think. Like, when would they have come? Like early, like late 80s?
I could tell you,
or
this
mid 80s.
No, Appetite for Destruction was released 87.
Okay.
And that album, I mean, carried for years.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they had an EP after that, but their next album wasn't until Use Your Illusion, and that was 91-ish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that album carried them for years. I mean, it was just, you heard it all the time.
Still carries their pocketbooks, whoever the writers are.
And sure. I can still taste the Milwaukee's Best, $5 for a 2-4 when I hear them. You know, I mean, these are fond memories.
Yeah. What other songs do you find super annoying that were big hits?
Okay. All right. Interesting question. It came right to my mind. This is kind of an odd answer because I don't intend any. This is all about this particular podcast is all about being respectful, correct? So I don't intend any disrespect. The band is talented. The band had really big hits. They had interest. You know, they found their place in music history and all that. And when I was younger, it never bothered me. But today, if I hear Kansas, I can't get to the off button fast enough. Mm. Like, Carry On My Wayward Son, I never liked it. I never disliked it. But now I can't stand it. It's going to get turned off. And that was a huge hit.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
So you could put that one on my list.
You know, there's a band that was really big a while ago and they've virtually disappeared in down Coldplay Alley. Mumford and Sons, do you know that band? Just kind of like, they were weirdly kind of like, yeah, like a folk rock kind of thing. And they were huge for a couple years. And then I feel like it was just complete overexposure. And now they've disappeared. I mean, I'm sure they haven't actually, but I feel like it was the same thing as Coldplay.
And I will wait for you. And I will wait for you.
Oh, you know what, Tom? We didn't talk about the other side of the equation, the Superman song.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Would you like me to spring that onto you later, or should we go ahead and?
Why don't you envision this as a double whammy? So let's get into the double.
All right, a two for one deal. We're gonna give that's how much we care about our listeners. We're gonna give them a two for one deal. The Superman song, which in my opinion is the better song.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the lyrics are really unique, but this is where I was going to go with this when I presented this when I was going to present this to you until you absolutely undercut me today.
Scooped
Thank you.
You
very much. by presenting I think Tom, the reason that song, well, one of the reasons, there are multiple, but one of the big reasons why that song didn't take in the US was it was so Canadian. It was such, it was addressing such Canadian issues the entire time. It was almost, well, this doesn't correspond with what I'm saying here. It was almost the American woman of its generation. It's it's comparing Canadian life versus how hard it is to be next to the United States. I really think that Tarzan in Superman's song is a reference to the American, big, strong, and not so bright, perhaps. So they're insulting
free,
me. So
free, libertarian kind of guy.
Right. I, Tarzan, you, Jane.
Yep.
Beat girl over the head and drag her by the hair. Caveman.
Tarzan was king of the jungle and lord over all the hardly a string together for words. I, Tarzan, you, Jane.
Whereas, listen to this, okay. The song should not be called Superman. The song should be called Clark Kent. Because Clark Kent comes up in the song. And
Clark
what he's,
Kent. No, there was,
no, there
a,
was
real
a
gent.
Real gent.
Yeah.
Exactly. The song should be called Clark Kent. Because Clark Kent, all right, I'm going to throw this out there. You take it the way you'll take it, is the patron saint of the middle-class Canadian man.
Ooh.
He is Clark Kent.
Oh, my God. You are really you're knocking it out of the profound park today, Ty. I think you're onto something there.
The reserve, but underneath mm-hmm. Clark Kent, rip that shirt off, and lo and behold, there's a big ass. Or so mm-hmm. Canadian men like to think, but kid themselves. But nevertheless, it's about sophistication and reserve. Mm-hmm. It's the song should be called Clark Kent, not Superman.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. But it probably caught more attention as Superman's song.
Because no one wants to hear about Clark Kent.
Well, exactly. You kind of trick them into it.
Yeah,
you send out the big shiny guy, and then it's really about the mild-mannered
reporter. Know,
reporter, yeah.
Yeah, but it really is. No one else would have said that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I like that a lot.
It's so distinctly Canadian somehow.
Yeah. You guys didn't like being compared to Tarzan?
Well, it was missed on us. A, because it wasn't a hit in the States. And B, hey, I can think of worse things than Tarzan. Thank you very much.
True, true.
Clark Kent being one of them.
Oh, wait a minute. Wow. Them is fighting words.
Yeah. So, but the song is beautiful. So nicely done. And again, he really, Brad, what's his name?
Roberts.
Brad Roberts. Roberts. Really does the right amount of the baritone there. Just right.
Yeah, that's true. Is too far. Superman's song is maybe a bit forced to be honest. But I think it was enough Fair of an enough. Attention grabber. One thing that's interesting too is that the woman who played keyboards, Ellen Reed, I think is her name. Mm-hmm. She did all her videos. She had all of the concept, which is pretty amazing at that time, because it was usually you'd hire someone to do that. And she came up with the concepts for all their videos. And they're pretty interesting, actually. They're pretty interesting videos. They're weird, but good.
Never
really
seen
cool.
a crash test dummy video.
Oh, you should watch them. They're really interesting.
Okay.
Little stories. It's pretty impressive. So she did all those. Pretty amazing. And she had a beautiful voice, too.
Yeah, that's right. She was the backing female.
She sang
vocals.
Some songs later, too.
Okay, some lead stuff.
Yep.
Another thing about the Superman song, or you could also add the God Shuffled His Feet album as well. There was in the early 90s in Canada, there was such a celebration of the prairie provinces.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of, because they're prairie, am I right?
Winnipeg,
they're from Saskatchewan?
Yeah, they're from Winnipeg. No, Winnipeg, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, close enough.
Same difference. North of the 49th. That's all we need to know there.
Oh, jeez.
Cold as...
Cold, yes.
Yeah, very cold. Very, one of the very, cold. Very crisp. Crisp.
Very cold city. Yep.
Yeah.
Winterpeg, we call it in...
If Canadians are calling it that, you know it sucks.
Do you know the band The Weaker Thans?
No.
You know them? They're from Winnipeg. They're fantastic. You should really listen to them. They have one song called I Hate Winnipeg. It's so funny. It's really good.
I'm sure written around February.
Well, it's kind of like a love-hate thing. You'll see when you hear it.
And in the turning lane, someone stalled again. He's talking to himself and hears the price of gas repeat his phrase. I hate Winnipeg.
I'll check that out. Yeah. And here's one. Also from that Crash Test Dummies era, the Waltons were also mm-hmm. a celebration of Midwest life.
Yeah.
Like My Tractor, which was a phenomenon more than it was a successful album. I mean, everyone listened to that for like a year or two and then
Not
abandoned
in the
it.
States.
No, not in the States.
Just in Canada, yeah.
Just in Canada.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that band, but I have to say I would not want to listen to them now. I don't think I could stomach it.
Again, just it had a life expectancy attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
The songs were all really, really nice three-piece, really interesting idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was finally a limit to how much you're actually going to listen to that.
Yeah. You know what? I should listen to them again. I think I actually might appreciate it more than I think.
At least for nostalgia purposes. I mean, yeah. That was a phenomenon. It was just kind of, it swept Canada, but all about the prairie and prairie life, farming and all of that kind of stuff.
Those are different times.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more division in Canada now, I would say.
I think you guys are probably worse off than we are.
Could be. I don't know about
that. I mean, it's pretty divided here, but yeah, it's noticeable when you look at Canada much more. Mm-hmm. In a geographic sense, in the States, obviously, there's sort of the South, but it's not so easy to break up. Mm-hmm. You know, Atlanta's part of the South. I mean, it's different than the rural South. It's just complicated.
Yeah.
But you guys could, you know, break up and petition to become states and maybe we'd take you, maybe we wouldn't.
there's a lot of talk about that, as you know.
You know, Alberta, Quebec and Alberta seem to be the big ones.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you get a lot of that where you are? A lot of like French Canada secession type talk, or
I mean, it's died down a lot. But I mean, there was a referendum on whether Quebec wanted to separate from Canada,
and it was within
it was close,
a fraction of a percentage point.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a pretty serious thing here. Yeah.
And then, of course, there was the violent stuff of the early 70s when Pierre Trudeau was president.
Oh, the FLQ crisis, yeah.
That's getting pretty serious at that point.
It was serious, yeah. Yeah. That's that famous line. The guy says, how far will you go in, limiting people's rights? Just watch me, says. That's one of his most famous lines. Do you know that one?
Trudeau.
Yeah. Just watch me. How far will you go in all of this? Just watch me.
In a very interesting figure, to be sure. Yeah. I mean, he was ironically, the great hold it together guy.
Yeah.
Because he had to be the one to squash out that separatist movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So what else you got on Superman song?
Oh, well, I hadn't had time
you,
to prepare.
You
we've probably covered it because it was going to go from one. I was going to demonstrate the changes from one to the next.
Yeah.
And then just again, how they killed the goose that laid the golden eggs is the expression I've been using.
Yeah.
By overdoing it on the elements that really worked in the right dosage on that first album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess maybe you could say that the first album was so Canadian. Maybe that's why it didn't really break out outside. And then the second one was had a much broader appeal because it was less intrinsically Canadian.
Interesting point. And they obviously decided to go for it. They made a sound, they developed a sound that was going to be more universally accepted. Like,
you know, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I don't know. Like I think it probably just happened. I don't see them as being the architects of this grand vision of we're going to, like, who would ever think we're going to put out a song like, and it's going to be a massive hit. Like I just don't think you could ever predict that. I think hit onto something there that no one knows. Right. And this is what makes it a great hit song from Mars. Cause who could predict that? And if you listen to, if you played that for kids now, they would be like, what is this?
That would
Choir
be
Boys
interesting.
Stuff. or they would love it. Who knows?
Maybe,
probably not.
But either way, they probably wouldn't recognize it. It's like, I've heard that song you know, 100 times.
Yeah.
So, it, yeah, it, like I said, it didn't really stand the test of time, but I'll still stand by it as a good song.
Okay. Again,
within the proper dosage.
But you prefer Superman song?
I do.
Sure.
Yeah. I think I even like the other one that it was kind of vaguely resembles Superman, At My Funeral, from that first album, yeah. Even better.
You know, they were doing some interesting stuff. They had that song and video for Androgynous. Remember that song?
Androgynous. Oh, yeah. That, but was pretty, that wasn't their song. That was...
Oh, was it?
Paul Westerberg?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think you're right.
I think it was somebody like the Replacements, yeah. Or something. Someone of that ilk. One of those, you know, those truly, those bands that really remained underground, but just barely.
Here comes Dick. He's wearing a skirt. Here comes Jane. You know she's sporting a chain. Same hair, revolution. Same build, evolution. Tomorrow, who's gonna fuss? And they love each other so. Androgynous. Closer than you know. Love each other so. Androgynous.
But an interesting song and a very nice interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Paul Westerberg, I haven't heard that name in 30 years.
I have a lot of friends who are just huge, massive fans of him and the Replacements.
Yeah, I had a roommate.
It never quite hit me that way, but I do enjoy it, but it didn't quite get to me in the way that it's got to a lot of people.
Had a roommate and a friend who was heavy into that. I wouldn't have known he existed otherwise. But also there's the whole subgenre of, I don't even know what you'd call it. It's obviously, it's kind of this alternative rock, but truly alternative, like Alex Chilton. You ever hear him?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, he's from Big Star.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
He was from Big Star and he sang.
One of my bandmates is, a lot of people I know are massive Big Star fans, but one of my bandmates is the biggest Big Star fan.
And Chilton heads that followed him around the country. It was a small but like violently loyal group.
Yeah.
Chilton, I mean, most people, here's another one that was sort of this all-time classic that fell away. Give Me a Ticket for an Aeroplane. A big late 60s hit, which Alex Chilton sang on when he was 16. Which you never hear anymore. Yet it was seen as this great, great, great hit.
Yeah.
You know the one I'm talking about, don't you?
I don't think so.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby again. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
But who is it? Who's the actual band?
Like... The Box Tops was the name.
Okay. Oh, cool.
But it was Alex Chilton on vocals.
Huh. Just pre-Big Star, I guess, then?
He was a kid before.
Yeah. Well, was there anyone else in between? But probably not.
No, you got me. I'm not a Chilton head.
Yeah.
But it's funny, some songs that are seen as all-time classics years later just fall away. You know, there's a number one hit from that era, late 60s, in the year 2525. It was a number one hit.
Hmm.
It just did not survive the test of time. You know the one I'm talking about?
No.
In the year 20, he goes 25, 25, 35, 35, 45, 45, all the way to 95, 95, and then 10,000 years. But it's humankind's progress.
In the year 25, 25, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find.
and
that's
it was
optimistic.
No, it was depressing.
Okay.
Yeah, it but it didn't stand the test of time, but yet a big hit in the era. So, you know, hits kind of redefine themselves, and hence that's kind of the theme of our podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe now that we've mentioned 2525, all our fans will listen to it. It'll become this massive number one hit yet again, thanks to us.
I thought we were going to do a TNT's Hit Songs from Mars together thing there.
Oh, we could have. Well, you can you can edit it in later if you want to.
Shh, no, there's no editing in this podcast, Ty. Those songs just magically appear. Thanks for tuning in to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars. We hope you enjoyed yourself and learned a few things along the way.
For a complete list of songs you heard in this episode, visit us at hsfm.buzzsprout.com. We hope you'll support the artists we featured by purchasing their music.
If you liked this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and you'll receive new episodes as soon as they become available. While you're at it, if you could give us a rating or review wherever you get your podcast, that would really help us out. We would like to thank The Reverb Syndicate for providing the theme song for our podcast. They have an extensive catalog of tunes just as rockin' as the one you hear here.
Here, here.
You can find them at thereverbsyndicate.ca. And on Facebook, SoundCloud, and Bandcamp, which typically pays artists the most. We would also like to thank Eric Minot for designing our podcast icon. You can find his design and illustration work on Instagram at Minot Graphics. That's MINOGRAPHX. You can connect with us on Twitter at Songs from Mars and at hsfm.buzzsprout.com.
Feel free to disagree, praise, correct, and chastise us.
We would also love to hear your idea of a hit song from Mars and why you think it fits the mold. Even better, if you felt like recording a voice memo and sending it our way, you can email us at hitsongsfrommars@gmail.com. We may even feature it on the show. Until next time, Earthlings.